You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. War is no time for civility. When two sides are fighting, they often resort to all manner of tactics to defeat one another. Be it guns or missiles or nuclear weapons, the end result of war is almost always destruction. However, during the 17th and 18th centuries, England found another way to win a war. Several of them, in fact. They resorted to insults. For many years, the English and the Dutch maintained an amicable relationship. When the Netherlands took up arms against the Kingdom of Spain in the late 1500s, it was the British who came to their aid. The ensuing Dutch revolt led to the creation of a new republic outside of Spain's rule. England and Spain continued to fight for some years. However, the British Royal Navy had started to run low on funding. King Charles I needed help and, being aligned with the Catholic Church, sought assistance from another Catholic-leaning country, Spain. But the Dutch had no idea. The other problem was that the Dutch were beginning to outpace the British when it came to their cargo ships. They had already dominated the herring trade, taken over English-held territories, fought onerous English taxes, and by the mid-17th century, moved in on English trading routes. Oliver Cromwell, head of the Commonwealth of England, had had enough. With his iron fist, he managed to rebuild the Royal Navy and present the first real threat to Dutch sea power. He took issue with their more reasonable freighting rates and variety of goods for sale. They also possessed far more cargo ships than the English. In 1651, Parliament passed a first in a series of acts designed to reduce the Netherlands' dominance on sea trade. It prohibited any non-English ship from bringing goods into English ports or its territories. The Dutch didn't take lightly to their former allies' tactics. They started growing their navy once again. When England ordered that other country ships lower their flags in the presence of English vessels, the Dutch refused. Shortly thereafter, war broke out. The First Anglo-Dutch War lasted 2 years, beginning in 1652. Three more wars followed over the next several decades. Throughout that time, relations between the Dutch and the English were strained. But when they weren't fighting, the two nations resorted to less violent and more childish methods of retribution. They called each other names. The Dutch spread rumors that the English were the spawn of Satan, and because of that, they were born with tails. British sailors referred to their Dutch counterparts as butterboxes and joked about how much they drank. Whenever a natural disaster, such as a fire or a flood, occurred in either country, each side believed that the other had invited punishment from God for their bad behavior. And contrary to popular belief, time did not heal all wounds. When the wars finally ceased, neither side felt like reconciling with the other. In fact, things became worse. The English incorporated the word Dutch into their vocabulary to mean anything bad or inferior. Dutch courage, for example, meant someone who had to drink heavily to build up the bravery necessary to fight. Dutch comfort signified the silver lining that at least things couldn't get any worse. Many of these phrases aren't used today, as our sensibilities and attitudes toward other cultures have matured since the 1700s. However, there is one saying that has held on despite its connotations. But still, funny enough, it didn't start in England. Its first use was traced back to an article in the New York Times in 1877. America, it seems, had also gotten into the habit of insulting the Dutch by equating their name with something unpleasant. The term the Americans had created was called a Dutch treat. It was used to describe an outing between two people where each person paid for their own food and drinks. Today, it's used anytime people pay their own share, whether it's a first date or a big group event, although we don't call it a Dutch treat anymore. Nowadays, we simply call it going Dutch.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This episode is sponsored by Intuit. Here's a story for you. Once upon a time, a young woman was haunted by the ghosts of bad financial decisions, with credit card debt and an empty savings account looming over her every day. But when she tried to ignore these ghosts, they only grew bigger and scarier. And these ghosts of her bad financial decisions were stopping her from living her best life. So she decided to face them head on and take control of her finances with help from Intuit. Intuit helps you face your financial fears with confidence through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, Intuit.com. to start living yours. Let's get into it. It was the golden age of the automobile, and Robert was an engineer who grew up just outside of Detroit, the heart of the American car industry. Like the rest of the country, Robert was in love with the steel machines racing across the open road. So when Robert became an engineer in the 1950s, he focused on how to help people stay safer in their cars. And that brought him to the idea of improving a common part of the car safety, the windshield wiper. At the time, wipers had two settings, on and off. But Robert knew that he could do better. He converted his basement into a cross between an engineering lab and an automotive shop. Hopefully, his new wife, Phyllis, knew what she was getting into when she married an inventor. Because I can only imagine the array of parts and tools that would have filled his home workshop, separated from their laundry room by panels of glass. We do know that at the very least, Robert brought home a dashboard and windshield he salvaged from a junkyard to test out his new mechanisms. Motorized arms swept across the glass in front of him like arms of a clock. And Phyllis must have been patient, because the work took Robert 10 years. When we factor in the fact that he was finishing his PhD, building a family, and starting a career teaching at a university in Detroit, that delay makes a lot of sense. But he involved the whole family in the project. On days when it started to rain, they would all run outside and dive into the car so that Robert could test his latest version. By the end, his notes filled 23 books, each 300 pages long. Eventually, though, he cracked it. He had created a windshield wiper that was more than just on or off, but instead moved at variable speed. It was something new, and that made it valuable to car manufacturers around Robert's home. So he set up a meeting with the company he loved, Ford. In October of 1963, he outfitted his Ford convertible with his finished invention and drove it down to the Ford plant where he showed it off to the engineers. To Robert, the offer was clear. Ford should buy his invention and bring it into the company. Together, they could make Ford cars safer for every driver. And when Ford called him back, it seemed like his American dream was coming true. But the second meeting didn't go quite the way he expected. When he arrived, they showed him their own version of the intermittent wiper, inspired by his own creation. Of course, they didn't have the benefit of Robert's 10 years of work, so they showered him with questions, and he answered all of them. "Show us how it works," they asked him, "and we'll buy it." And as their conversations continued over time, it seemed like Robert was on the team. But then the line went dead. When Ford finally rolled out cars with intermittent wipers in 1969, Robert and his invention weren't even mentioned. And once it was on the market, the invention spread. How far? Well, the idea was so good that eventually Robert's son Dennis brought home the controls for a new system being used in Mercedes cars. When Robert cracked it open, he realized it was also a copy of his design. It was a massive blow. And for years, Robert struggled to come to terms with his life's work being swiped by the biggest automakers on the planet. But Robert was a fighter. Fortunately, he had filed for a patent back in 1964. And when it came through in 1967, it gave him what he needed to take the fight to big companies that were scooping up cash from his contribution. It wasn't easy, though. In fact, the battle was hard enough that Robert's family suffered. He poured everything he had into the struggle, not just for the money, but for his work to be acknowledged. And there were major losses along the way. Robert often represented himself when no one was willing to take on the fight against big companies like General Motors, and those cases didn't always make it far. But in the end, Robert would get some wins as well. A jury ruled against Ford in 1990, and a judgment against Chrysler ordered the company to pay him $30 million. It was even appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, as the company tried to duel the inventor into the ground. Fortunately for Robert, the justices refused to bend to the big company's pressure. It became a classic story of the underdog coming out on top. But there's one more thing that makes Robert's invention fascinating. You see, the whole project to prevent car accidents started out with an accident, and a bad one, but not a car crash. You see, when Robert was on his honeymoon, celebrating his brand new marriage, he did what so many people do and popped open a bottle of champagne. And that's when the cork became a dangerous projectile. It hit young Robert in the eye. His new wife, Phyllis, rushed to his side as the blood ran down his face. The injury was bad enough that he lost most of the sight in his left eye. In the end, it was Robert Kern's own accident that inspired an invention that would come to define his life's work. All inspired by the original intermittent wiper that we all benefit from every day. The lid of the human eye. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.